TV hitmaker Amy Sherman-Palladino enters the streaming game with Amazon's The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. The show features some of her signatures, snappy dialogue, spunky women, and family-driven farce. Does it live up to the hype? We tell you right now.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin!
Yes. How about the soundtrack on this wonderful Amazon show?
So good.
I mean, the music in the 50s, 60s is like some of my favorite music, so I was on board.
She was on board, and guys, so are we. This is the after show for Amazon's The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, a show, as you'll see, we like very, very much, and we'll be talking all about episodes 1 and 2 today here on this after show. We will be covering the entirety of the season, and we decided as producers that the best way to do it would be to cover 2 episodes at a time per after show, so we will be covering episodes 1 and 2 today. If this is your first time to AfterBuzz TV, we are an online coverage TV coverage network, and we cover all TV all the time. Guys, my name is Jeff. If you want to find me online, you can do that at Jeffrey C. Graham. And I have some beautiful co-panelists right over here that I would love to introduce.
Hey, guys. My name is Brianna Phipps.
Hey, guys. Sam Davidson here. Super excited to talk about this show. I love it.
Me too. As I mentioned, we're covering Amazon's The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. I feel like it's pretty marvelous. I would like to hear what you guys think. Let's talk about just episode 1 right now. Do our best. Some of us have seen a little bit ahead, but for those of you who haven't, it's okay. This is a spoiler-free zone. We're covering 1 and 2. Sam, let's start with you. As our resident Jewish comedian, What did you think of the pilot to The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel?
I loved it. It was a lot of buildup, but then by the end of the episode, you feel like you got something awesome seeing her get on stage, and it was beautiful. It's one of my favorite shows of all time. I honestly, it sounds lame. I feel like it changed my life a little bit.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's very important to me. Cool. I love it.
I loved it as well. I love time period pieces, so it was right down my alley, and so I was on board from the beginning, and I didn't know where it was going. By the time I got to the end of episode 1, I was like, okay, I'm completely in.
Yeah. I really don't think a pilot gets better than this. Sam and I actually do a TV pilot review show where we cover pilots exclusively, and having seen a lot of pilots, this is really the gold standard for me. I mean, obviously the characters are really well written and really sharply defined in this first episode. It's beautifully shot, but even the small things like the production design and the costumes and the music are like pitch perfect. It's so rare that a pilot comes out this confidently showing you exactly what the show is. So I really like it. It's funny. Normally I have little nitpicks with shows like this, and I really don't have anything I can say against this show.
No.
Especially based on the pilot alone. So I think with that, we should go ahead and talk about the pilot. It comes out with a bang. One of the very first things we see is Mrs. Maisel, who goes by Midge in the show, giving her very own toast at her very own wedding. How did you guys feel about the first moments of this pilot?
As a Jewish woman, I loved it. I got all of the jokes about being kosher and, you know, that whole thing. And I almost just felt like it was made for me specifically. And I was worried that other people wouldn't get it. But yeah, I thought it was hilarious. And that's the girl you want to be. What a cool lady. Who doesn't want to marry her?
Yes.
Yeah, I loved her. I mean, I'm not Jewish, but I grew up with a lot of friends that were. And just like so many little things reminded me of their families and everything like that. And her father actually was one of my favorite parts of that whole speech. Just him sitting like fretting over money. And I'm like, I know it's stereotypical, but Tony Shalhoub did such a great job with it.
It's amazing. I mean, like, the Jewishness is such a central part of this show. And Amy Sherman-Palladino is also Jewish. Mm-hmm. I think it would have felt a little problematic if the show wasn't written by a Jewish person.
Yes.
But she nails it. If you guys are watching, I know some of you guys are probably listening to the podcast, but if you're watching on our YouTube, we just showed a photo of Amy Sherman-Palladino. Let's talk a little bit about her before we continue coverage, because she is also the creator of Gilmore Girls, also the creator of Bunheads. This sort of really snappy, elevated dialogue is sort of her signature. Are you fans of her work in general?
Yeah, I'm a big Gilmore Girls fan. I mean, that show also is top 5 favorite shows of all time for me, and I've seen it in its entirety 2 to 3 times, so I'm a huge fan of hers. Yeah. And I love the dialogue. It takes the perfect actor to do it, right. And every time they get the perfect actors, I think.
I agree, Sam. Huge Gilmore Girls. I don't know if you can be around our age group and not be a huge fan of Gilmore Girls.
There are some people, but I don't trust them.
It's like a red flag if you don't like Gilmore Girls.
Yeah, I'm like, oh.
I mean, it's very comforting as a woman to watch something that was written by women, and because you get that sense. Like, sometimes you can feel like these powerful women dialogues that you kind of don't connect with. Mm-hmm. But with Gilmore Girls and with this show, it's like, I'm like, right there in it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, I've been through this. I understand what she's saying. And it comes through in that way, just in the she's just very powerful in writing these strong women characters.
Yeah. And it was so much so when I was watching it with my family over Christmas, it was the only thing we could all agree on, like all eight of us. And my dad was like, is this real? Did this really happen? Was there a comic back then that I didn't know about? I'm like, no, Dad, it's all completely made up, but it's so believable.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, like, this wedding scene is so indicative of Amy Sherman-Palladino's style and such a good little microcosm of the show as a whole. I think, like, the opening scene of a pilot is so important because you have to establish, like, what the show is and who we're meeting and what a perfect exact picture of who Midge Maisel is. Because there's even a sense of her giving her toast. You can sense that she wants to be a performer. It's a bit, I mean, you guys have seen it, but the journey for her during this first season and during this first episode is becoming a stand-up. And I think this scene really plants the seeds of that. You know, we get to see her as a performer.
I also love that it shows that it's just natural for her, mm-hmm. that she's not trying. Because I think that that's something a lot of people confuse with stand-up comedians. And maybe you can speak mm-hmm. a little more on that, Sam. But the fact that she just goes up, she just does her thing and is naturally funny. It's not, she's not forcing this funny issue. She's just saying what she thinks and it comes across in that way. Whereas we see later on with her husband,
Definitely.
Yeah, I mean, she likes to tell stories.
Yes.
And she's great at it.
Yeah.
And it's fun to watch. You know, it's one of those people go, you should do stand-up. It's like, but she actually should.
She actually should. Well, you mentioned Midge's husband, Joel Maisel, played by Michael Zegan. Let's talk about this, because this is a very interesting character. I think he's been received the most prickly amongst mm-hmm. all the characters because, let's face it, he's kind of a dick. Let's talk about Joel Maisel. Right from the start, we learned that he is an aspiring stand-up comedian, and he's not very good. How do you feel about this character? How do you feel about this performance?
I felt for him sometimes throughout the show, because there are times where you think you're funny, you do a great set, everyone laughs, and then you do it again, and it's terrible. I mean, I felt his pain. I think both characters are kind of victims of the world that they live in, of how they were raised, and they don't really know any better.
Yeah.
And progressively, you know, he kind of does start to know better, as does she, but this is what they were taught. They don't know anything else. They don't know how else to live their lives, you know, how to treat each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that you brought that up, and I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, go ahead.
It's a really smart point, because I think Amy Sherman-Palladino very intentionally set this series in the 1950s, because she's not only giving us a fun, light show about the world as exterior, like as New York, but she's also giving us sort of a look at the interior lives of what it was like to live during that time. And even though Joel is kind of a dick, I also felt for him. I think it's really, really hard to show us a cheater, but also give us a little sympathy for him. I know a lot of people don't feel any sympathy for him at all. So, Brie, I'm wondering how you responded to this character.
Yeah, I didn't have a ton of sympathy for him. Yeah. Like, I get the feeling bad for that he wants this thing and he's just not good at it. But, you know, it's like that thing where you have your own talents and you don't need to do something that isn't in your wheelhouse. And it's not fair of him to just put it on her
right.
as to why he's a failure.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, we see this woman that's, like, pretty much doing everything for him. Mm-hmm. Like, going to bed seemingly perfect, waking up 2 seconds later to go take off all of her makeup, put on this night cream so that she looks perfect for him, wakes up before he gets up so she can look perfect for him. So that made me not have as much sympathy for him.
As a woman, though, wasn't that so powerful, kind of seeing that she did that every single day? And you think, oh, my God, how many women back then did that every single day?
It honestly made me be like, I need to take better care of my skin.
Oh, my God, no. I was like, I want her to wake up with mascara down her face. That's the part that pissed me off the most, mm-hmm. I think, about him, that she was expected to do that, and he was completely oblivious to the fact that she just looks perfect in the mornings.
But I love that commentary, though, because I feel as women, that's how I feel sometimes. I feel like, look at everything I do all the time to look good, not just for myself, but for...
Yes, that's why men should pay for dates, because we have to get manicures and stuff. It costs a lot of money, guys.
It is complicated, because you can feel the feminist instincts of the lead character, but you also feel someone who wants to be a Jewish housewife mm-hmm. in a society.
And it's also that time period.
It's that time period, yeah. So we're really seeing her on the precipice of two different lives. And the pilot, and even the first two episodes, pull her in either direction constantly, which makes this show so interesting. Going back to Joel for a minute, I think, and you touched on this, Sam, but the thing that's so interesting to me about his character is that, like, I kind of, as someone who has a dream, as someone who lives in Hollywood, I would never do this. I'm getting married in August, and I would never do this to my fiance, but there are people whose dreams are so desperate and who so want to be talented that they'll be driven to do terrible things because of it. Whether or not it's okay, I think it does give us, at least it gives him a reason to
make it. Makes him somewhat relatable.
Yeah, it makes him relatable, even if he's still terrible.
The one thing I did like about his character that we brought up in the first episode was the idea that he doesn't have original jokes.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of controversy, because I think that gets brought up a lot even with big comedians nowadays, like that they don't have any of their own material.
Right.
So I really liked that his character just kind of like being like, everybody does it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the show doesn't shy away from the pain of wanting something but not being talented enough for it. Because that is painful mm-hmm. if you have a dream, but coming to the realization that you just don't have what it takes.
And it is extremely frustrating for someone to come in that doesn't care, doesn't think she cares about that same dream. Mm-hmm. hasn't worked for it for years, even though, okay, you know, he half-assed it. He was stealing jokes. But for someone to just come in and so naturally do something you've been dying to do for years, I get that. Mm-hmm. It hurts. It kills me sometimes when people just move here from Minnesota and they have the dream and it works for them automatically.
Right.
And it's like, wow, that hurts. Burn.
Well, and I think that's why they say don't date someone who's also in the industry, especially going for the same dreams, because it can so quickly cause resentment, especially when someone who doesn't even have the same dreams you do has all the talent.
Mm-hmm.
Which leads to a very important scene that I want to talk about, which is their breakup. The thing that impressed me so much about this scene was that up until now, it's been this breezy, fun show, pretty funny. And we get this very...
Came out of nowhere.
And I was very moved by the drama of this scene. How did you guys respond to their breakup?
Well, yeah, this is the point I hated him the most.
Yes.
Absolutely. And I loved how she was making the jokes and he's, you know, it's my suitcase. You're leaving with my suitcase?
Right.
It was great and I loved her, but God, what a jerk.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I was so invested at that point with her, like, being this little housewife, doing everything for him, going to the clubs and baking, like, different dishes.
A roast.
For
a brisket.
Brisket.
Yes. So that he could have a better time slot. Like, they really force that issue that she really does everything in her day for him.
Mm-hmm.
And then to have him end it like that, and you have two kids, and you're married, and living in her basically her apartment because her parents pay for it.
Right.
Like,
Yeah.
And it's also, I think, a lot of cultures, religions are a little too close with their parents. It happens in a lot of different scenarios. But with Judaism, there is kind of that thing. Like, you're a little too close with mom and dad.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I mean, the fact that they're living in the same building that, you know, in the apartment they own and raising the kids, like, that's a lot.
Yeah.
You need some space.
Definitely. I just thought this was such an impressively written and directed scene. And, like, it's the small details. Like, when he goes, you don't know what it's like to have your dreams end. And she says, well, my marriage. And it's kind of funny. I mean, like, I can't believe this show can balance such a serious scene with comedy.
Well, I love that. I love that they showcase that sometimes for people, a dream is just that relationship.
Right.
And because people write that off, I think, so easily. Like, mm-hmm. a dream has to be a career. It doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
A dream can be anything. And her dream was to have this life that, for her entire life, she's been pedigreed to have.
Yeah, that's a great point, Brie. Well, the fallout from the breakout, or from the breakup happens, and we meet Midge's parents. This scene was such an interesting mix of intensity and comedy. I have to say, I really want to credit... it's Tony Shalhoub, yeah, playing...
the father.
Playing
father,
the father.
Babe.
He rushes off into the parlor and starts playing piano. This is such a funny take on a release of rage. Go ahead, Brie.
No, I love when... Because I'm a musical theater fan, and this is what musical theater does so well, or just plays in general. They bring in that comedy in the most traumatic experiences. And so to have her be going through this really traumatic experience and her parents just playing off like, this is happening to us. How could you do this to us?
Hilarious.
Because I think also as a... I growing up, like, anytime, like, something wouldn't go right in my life, I would kind of have that instinct that, like, oh, it's... My parents are going to be so disappointed. And this kind of just showcased that perfectly.
Yeah.
I mean, it terrifies me what it would have been like to live during that time. Because I always said, I was obsessed with Lucille Ball as a kid. Like, when my parents got divorced, they said, what do you want? I said, I want her hand painted on my wall so I could sleep and look at her every night. And that's what happened.
That's my favorite thing I've ever heard. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was really weird. And so, but, like, I don't know. I just... Growing up back then, everyone says you were meant to be born in the 50s and 60s. Hell no. I would have been a disaster. I would have not been able to handle it. All of that pressure and no ambition for women except for getting married and having children. It's awful.
Yeah, it's like in some ways I could see like myself living in there just for like fashion,
yeah.
I think.
Yes.
But, yeah, and in the not being able to speak your mind, not be able to kind of be independent in your own way? No way at all.
I'd be like an old maid alone forever giving fake psychic readings. That's, well, that's what would have happened to me back then.
You could be the tea leaf lady that we meet in episode two.
Yeah, but probably.
To both of your points, the thing that I love is that right when she says, he left me, they say, what did you do? Yeah. It's such, that's such a painful perspective to take and really shows you the time. You know, it's like, this was your job, is like their implication. And she failed at her job, even though he left. It's a funny scene, but also kind of painful to think about that time. So, of course, this is what really pushes her to have this really climactic moment. One of my favorite moments of television from 2017, her first set as a stand-up, quote unquote. She doesn't realize it. She goes on stage to tell her story. And in doing so, she has this revelatory stand-up comedy moment. How did you guys feel about this scene?
I loved it. It's also kind of how I do stand-up comedy. I try to make jokes, but I also just tell stories. Yeah, I take my top off. No, I tell stories, and it's just, and the way she told it, and the way she just grabbed the audience, and everyone's like, what is happening? Is this real? It was one of my favorite moments of television ever.
Yeah. So good.
I love that the power of just getting up there and just being yourself, just doing your own, and like speaking to this room full of strangers about your very personal life, because I think most people's instinct is like, let's keep my private life private, which is a little different nowadays with social media. But to see something like in that time period, to bring forth like, I'm going to just showcase this when it's not okay to do that. And even the outcome of like, you know, I can't remember if it goes into a little bit of episode two, but of the police coming.
That's episode one.
Yeah, I was like, was it both?
Yeah.
Yeah, the police coming and being like, you're being too disruptive. You're swearing. Like,
well, there was, you know, public nudity a bit. Right. So,
yeah. But I mean, but even they go even to the swearing part. Like, you're not allowed to, like, swear.
Well, yeah, and she doesn't have her license, a performer. I mean, what BS is that? It's terrible.
It's terrible, and but also, like, simultaneously amazing. And so she is escorted to the police station, but someone catches her eye. And that's sort of the club booker, Susie, played by, I think, the best Alex Borstein we've ever seen.
I love Alex Borstein. I've loved her in everything.
Since
Lizzie McGuire movie when I was a kid, to, like, Family Guy,
Miss
Lois.
Miss Swan.
She's such a brilliant comedian and actress. And I actually heard from my producer, Marissa, before this that she originally was Sookie in Gilmore Girls.
Oh, I can see
that. They actually shot the pilot, I guess, with her being Sookie, and they replaced her with Melissa McCarthy later on. But
God, that sucks.
But she got this instead. And I gotta say, for me, we don't see a ton of her in episodes one and two. But even the moments she gets, she just really plays. We'll talk casting in general, but it's hard to picture other actors in these roles. I think all of them are knocking it out of the park.
Yeah.
Okay, so Midge is sent to prison, but luckily Susie, played by Alex Borstein, has her attention and ends up bailing her out, which I thought was a really interesting twist and a fun way to start their relationship. Mm-hmm. And the very last thing we see after Midge kind of comes to terms with what's happening and who she is, and she seems to maybe be embracing her potential, she decides to go bail Lenny Bruce out of jail. I thought this was such a smart way to end the episode. How did you guys feel about actually seeing Lenny Bruce in person before we kind of act out of this episode?
I mean, in a way, it was confusing because you're thinking, oh, wait, there are real people that are from this time that are characters on this show. Wait, was Midge? Nope, Midge is not real as far as people back then. But I loved it. I mean, it was so fascinating, so much fun. And he did a great, great job of portraying him. And it wasn't gimmicky. It wasn't as though he was trying to be Lenny Bruce. He just was Lenny Bruce.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, as someone that didn't know stand-up comics, especially from that time period, like, I'm not in the world of that, and I'm getting more into it now. So I had to kind of go research this to even know, because I heard that it was a real person, but I had no idea when I watched the episode that this was based on a real person. So it was kind of a little fun way for me to actually explore that time period, explore more stand-up comics from that time period.
Absolutely. And just to tease you guys, we will actually be having a segment called Stand-Up Spotlights, where we will talk about some of the big comics of the 50s and 60s, which is a lot of historians acknowledge is the time when stand-up comedy really changed. So we'll be hearing some Lenny Bruce later in the show, so stay tuned for that. Yes, exactly. I actually went online and found the original pilot script because I wanted to read exactly what Lenny Bruce says. Midge asks him, do you love it? Do you love stand-up? And he says, okay, let's put it like this. If there was anything else in the entire world that I could possibly do to earn a living, I would. anything. I'm talking dry cleaners to the Klan, crippled kid portrait painter, slaughterhouse attendant. If someone came to me and said, you can either eat a guy's head off or do 2 weeks at the Copa, I'd say pass the effing salt. It's a terrible, terrible job. It should not exist, like cancer and God. Then he leaves and she asks one more time, do you love it? He kind of smiles and walks away and she says, yeah, he loves it. Which I just thought, I know that's kind of like a little bit of summary, but is there a better end to this episode than that?
No, because it's him doing stand-up as he walks out. Right. Like, how else could you end this episode any more perfectly?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, she's the master. She's one of our best writers, and this scene alone shows us that. So, I mean, we like the pilot. It's pretty clear.
Yes.
I think move on to episode two now, unless you guys have any other thoughts about the pilot.
No.
Okay, cool. Let's talk about episode two then. Really, this is the episode when we see all of the familial fallout from the decision of Joel leaving Midge. I also loved this episode. I thought this episode was great. I thought it did a really good job of exploring the actual consequences of what happened. I think sometimes comedies are afraid to ignore the consequences of when things like this happen, but this show really kind of dug its heels into the ground and said, what would actually happen if he left? How did you guys feel about this episode?
I liked it. It's so infuriating as Midge feels infuriated. It's like talking to someone that says, you know the sky is blue, they're saying it's black. And it's like, oh my God, he left me. He did this.
Right.
How is everyone so angry with me? It's so confusing. But she handled it in the best way possible, I think, which is, you know, she's trying to move on. She's trying to move forward. But also, how hurtful must that be to constantly be told she did something wrong when it's so clear that she didn't? But she just continues to move forward and not dwell on it, which is one of the reasons I love her character.
Yeah, I loved this episode too. I love the kind of like differences we get between her trying to move on with her life and kind of accept that this is happening versus everybody else trying to keep it in the dark because, oh, you're going to get back together eventually and we don't want anybody to know that this ever happened.
Right.
So you just have to pretend like everything's fine.
Yeah.
And just how hard that must be to walk through day-to-day life, like trying to move on by simultaneously being having to stick to your story of, no, we're fine because my parents are going to die if I act like I'm okay with this or I'm moving forward or that I've accepted this decision.
Yeah, she's really stuck between two worlds and she's trying to figure out which world she actually wants. And that's what's so interesting about this whole show is Joel leaving is a terrible, terrible thing. But in some ways, she maybe should thank him because would she ever have known the life that she might actually want if he wouldn't have done that?
No, never.
So that's the interesting question is as mad as you want to get towards him, he might be the reason she really discovers who she is. So it's complicated. The thing I like is we pick up right where we left off. So we actually see Lenny Bruce right away. We get this funny montage of her walking through New York, the really gross, disgusting parts of New York while this really upbeat music plays. Again, we mentioned it, but the music in the show is so good.
It's amazing. I mean, that's a lot of money, though, the Frank Sinatra. Yes. I mean, it doesn't make the show. It's a huge part of it. But I was thinking to myself, wow, that is a lot of money Amazon had to pay for that perfect music, but they did it for a good reason. I mean, right. It fit perfectly.
But even if you look at that, like Frank Sinatra, while being a musician, when you look at that time period, people were so many things. And Frank Sinatra and people of the Rat Pack were kind of stand-ups in their own right.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of
perfect.
Yeah, perfectly fits together in this essence of that. They all, like, Hearst doing the stand-up, drinking on stage is basically what all these men of the time period did during their musical acts.
It's a really smart observation, Brie. Yeah, so we quickly move to this yoga scene. It's not necessarily yoga, but it's, like, housewife workout session. I loved this. I thought this was such a funny look into the lives of 50 women in the 50s.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, okay, cool. I'll go to the gym then if that's all they're going to make me do.
I know. But, yeah, this is an example. I want to credit Amy Sherman-Palladino one more time. It's kind of a love fest for her, but she's, I mean, one of our greatest working writers. But she also wrote and directed this episode. It's this important dialogue we're having where we see the divorcees in the back, and she says, see how they're working so much harder? That's because now their job is to find a man. It's, like, hilarious. But what a smart, even just from a directorial standpoint, having all this intense dialogue amidst all these workout moves where they're literally doing Kegels with glass bottles. So yeah. Smart. I love this.
Yeah, just it was random, but it was perfect.
Yes.
And it made total sense.
It was also kind of like, how far have we actually come? Because when I go to the gym, which I don't go that often, but when I do, I still see women like with full makeup on, like they're kind of looking at the guys trying to find them. And I'm like, oh man, we're still here. We're still doing this.
Yeah. Hilarious. But all of a sudden, Midge starts to realize, like, damn, even though I might have a taste for the stand-up comedy thing, like, that's not what women do. That's not what Jewish housewives do. Like, I need to decide what I really want. And this is when we get the parental reactions to the fallout from Joel and Midge's breakup. I kind of want to go one by one. I want to start by talking about Joel's parents, whose names I should have here, but I
have
don't.
The IMDb list.
Perfect. As you go pull that up, we learn that Joel's dad actually works in the sort of sewing tailoring factory where he actually got Joel a job. And we start to see Joel's dad's reaction. At first, he doesn't seem that mad. But then we learn that he actually moves Joel's assistant off of his desk as a punishment for what's happened. And we really see the fallout from this.
Damn Penny Pan.
Penny Pan.
I literally cannot with Penny Pan. And I love how much they say her name. And but I loved his father. His father's kind of, he's definitely a jerk too.
Right.
I would say Midge has better parents than Joel mm-hmm. does overall. But, you know, because it seems he's probably done the same thing is the idea that I got. He knew exactly why they split up because he had an affair with the assistant. So he's like, oh, move her. He already knew.
Right.
Well, how cliche to have the affair with the secretary, first of all.
Yeah, it was a secretary.
How Mad Men is this?
Yes.
But I also love that they can't tell his mom.
I know.
His mom is not allowed to know. She will literally die if she finds
out. So annoying.
Except, I know, his mom's probably one of my least favorite characters in the
You know what?
Show.
I'm loving it. She's a little broadly drawn. She's definitely the comedy part of this being a comedy, but I want to credit both of these actors real quick. Do you have them? Bree's looking for it. No.
I'm trying to...
We'll get to it. But,
sorry.
No, you're totally fine. We meet... So we see Joel's dad's reaction. Next, we see Joel's mom's reaction. This is, if you wanted to talk about the potentially problematic portrayals of Jewish women, what do you think, Sam?
I'm going to be honest with you. I have an aunt, my mother's sister. I literally won't speak to her anymore. I think she's a terrible person. This is her. Like, and her, she has three boys, who one of which is going through a divorce, has been so involved in the divorce, and is just crazy and toxic and cannot get her way out of it. And that's real. It's true. There are a lot of women out there like that. And it's not, you know, prejudiced or anti-Semitic. It's just kind of the way it is. Every religion and culture has some crazy people, and that's one of them.
Right.
And I do have the actress names. It's great. Kevin Pollak plays the father, and Caroline Aaron plays the mother.
Did an amazing job.
You know, I actually do want to really quick credit our sister network, Popcorn Talk. We have a show on there called I Blame Dennis Hopper, hosted by the very famous Ileana Douglas. She emailed Kevin Pollak earlier this year. So if you want to see some more, he will give you some insight, I'm sure, into that role.
Interviewed, sorry.
And yeah, no problem. Oh, what did I just say?
Emailed.
She may have done that as well.
They probably did that. Can you imagine if my job was just to say, I know they're on an email-based relationship, so check that out. It's a great interview. Check that out. So obviously none of the parents are very happy with this. Eventually, we get this dinner with both families.
Oh my God.
This is
the most uncomfortable, awkward dinner.
Yeah.
One of the most, like, you know those, it's like The Office. Like, when you watch it and you're just feeling uncomfortable watching it, I felt uncomfortable watching this dinner.
Yeah, it's like mm-hmm. Meet the Parents for me. It's hard for me to watch Meet the Parents, the first one, because I'm like, oh God, no.
I know.
And it just continues to happen.
I would just be like her, just with the wine glass, just refilling the wine, just...
She looked good, too.
I know, in that red dress.
In that red dress.
That her mom made her wear.
That her mom made her wear because
she has to make him know he's losing.
Yes, that's exactly what the line is. Yeah,
I don't think Penny Pan could rock that red dress, I'm just
saying. I don't think she could either. That's what I love. She says, if he's going
to
see you.
She has the personality to work that dress, okay?
Right. I think the exact line is, you're going to see him, which means he's going to see you, and he has to see exactly what he's giving up on. Such good writing. The thing I like about this show is it makes the very sharp observation that people getting married isn't just two people getting married. It's two families getting married.
Yeah.
And sometimes shows forget to embrace this, but especially in Jewish culture, when you have grandparents and you have children, it's much more complicated than two people leaving, and this dinner did not shy away from that. One scene in particular I want to talk about is when Midge's dad, Abe, pulls Joel into the bedroom and has this really intense conversation.
Great.
Yeah.
It was fantastic. I loved that conversation. I loved how Midge's father told him not to address him. You know, what did he... Because I think Joel called him by his name or something, and he was like, no, this is what's happening. And all this stuff happens in the bedroom.
Yeah.
Well, and I love that they show that through everything, through them not being happy about this decision, through them kind of blaming her, it's still his little girl, and he's still going to be like, you're not treating my little girl right.
Right.
So you need to step up.
Yeah, I appreciated this. I think, like, it was nice to see Abe. I don't always agree with his perspectives on her role in the relationship, but he wants to be the best dad he can. He's trying to be the best dad he can. I'm not a violent man, Joel. And if it were a different circumstance, I would throw you out of this bedroom window. It's really kind of intense and great stuff. Yeah. I want to quickly talk about, too, actually, Sam, you first, then I'll jump in.
I was
in,
just going to say, like, made Joel poop his pants.
Yeah,
it was amazing to see that.
It was good. It was about time that Joel really starts to question the decision he's made. Because then the last thing he says, I'm just remembering, is, when are you going to find another woman like her? And you can really see on his face, like, oh, S word.
He knows Penny is not that woman. Penny's not this woman that he's going to end up having this long, wonderful life with, that they don't have that connection.
Yeah.
And I think that's such a great thing to showcase, is that relationships are more than just appearance.
Absolutely.
Relationships go well deep into your emotional connection with each other. Mm-hmm. And that's what Midge has with him.
And your lives, you know, it's your whole lives together. I want to quickly just shout out again, the production design. This show is just apartment porn. Like, these apartments are so beautiful. And all these tracking shots where we're going from room to room.
Yeah.
That's, like, one of my favorite things about this show.
And for people that aren't, you know, familiar with how to shoot film and TV, that is hard.
Mm-hmm.
And to have just those through shots where you're following someone and not cutting, that's extremely difficult. And they did it so well that people, in a way, don't even notice it unless they're very familiar with how to make
Vulture things. Thing, it even says that the tracking shot would have been really expensive.
Yeah.
And to just comment on the amount of budget that this show has, because that's how much Amazon, I think, believed in this show from the get-go.
And I love it. And it makes me so happy. And I'm just very happy that it succeeded in that, because what a bummer it would have been if it didn't. And I mean, it continues to get people to watch it still now. And it changes, like, everyone's life, I feel like, that watches it.
Right. Well, like all great streaming services, I think the job is to trust your creators, you know? If you really believe in a creator, clearly as Amazon did with Amy Sherman-Palladino, and you let them run, she joked during her Golden Globe speech, the great thing was all the checks cleared. I'm so happy at Amazon. That's when you get a show like this, mm-hmm. I believe. And I think Amazon really, really champions their creators, and that's why they're putting out such great content right now. Of course, the dinner explodes in a horror fest of awful parental relationships and in-law drama. And once again, Midge hits the bottle of wine and she goes to the comedy club and gives us yet another amazing stand-up set. So it's funny, it is kind of just an exact replay of episode one. Normally this kind of thing would bug me, but I loved it again.
It's her therapy, you know, in a way. It's her way of dealing with things. Sometimes when I do stand-up, if I don't have any messed up stuff going on in my life, I don't know what I'm going to talk about. And it is very therapeutic, and I completely felt that. I got that she needs an outlet. No one's listening to her. No one thinks she's right. And when she gets up on that stage, she owns it, and this is her outlet to express herself, but it's just therapy too.
Well, it also shows that the root of most comedy, which is, I totally believe, starts pain. With trauma and pain.
Yeah, good point. But that pretty much brings us out. The cops come right back in, and we're left to wonder what we're going to see in episode 3, which we will be covering, guys, I actually believe, in 5 minutes, right? Cool. So if you're watching live,
Maybe
more like 10. We got to reset. But if you're watching live, stay on this channel. If you're listening to the podcast, just go ahead and click that next one when we finish this episode.
I do want to just shout out. We do have some people in our chat room.
Amazing.
So I do want to just kind of shout them out. Thanks for joining us, guys. Yes. We have Mina Wahab is in here, Simba McReynolds, and Rafi 3000. Areas. So thank you guys so much for chatting in with us today. We appreciate you.
Mina is a friend of the network as well and an amazing host. So Mina, thanks for joining. Let's go ahead and talk about our next segment, unless we have any other thoughts on episode 2. Great. So as I mentioned, we're going to have a special segment every episode called our stand-up spotlight. That was a lot of S's. I'm impressed I managed to get that out. And today we'll be talking about Mr. Lenny Bruce himself, who's actually featured in the first episode. Our producer, I would love, Marissa, for you to cue up this clip real quick.
People say to me, how come you're divorced? I always make up a lie. I say, my mother-in-law broke up my marriage. I say, well, how'd that happen? So one day my wife came home early from work and she found us in bed together. She's an old woman, but firm. And I don't know if there's any losers sitting out here. But when you break up with your old lady, you get divorced. The places that you go together, then when you go in alone, they always say, where it's, I don't know if it's the market or the laundromat, they say, where's your wife? They say, I'm divorced. There was an embarrassed silence. They don't know what to do. You should get together, you know. A lovely couple. They don't know what the hell. They don't even know you, but... So we used to go to a Chinese restaurant on this strip a lot, in Los Angeles. For years we went there together. So when I go in alone, the waiter says to me, "Where's Mama? How come you don't bring Mama anymore? Such a beautiful girl, the wrong red hair, but I like her. Here's some cookies. Bring Mama home some cookies." Because I'm divorced. So, you better off.
All right, that's good. I think part of the reason I chose this clip was because I feel like it's a very good indication of actually some of the themes we're talking about in this show.
Well, okay, so I just want to say that I never heard that clip, and they end up kind of using his story later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, do they?
Yeah, they awesome. Do with the Chinese restaurant.
Amazing. Okay, cool. So that's a great tease for you guys who maybe haven't seen more episodes, which actually I fall in that category. So I can't wait to see more of that. I think Amy Sherman-Palladino is very importantly showing us that not only was this a transitional time for women and women's roles, but also just for comedy in general. You know, we can hear that this was sort of the first time that this very observational, personally driven comedy came to the forefront, which is really all of our best comics working today borrow from this. Mm-hmm. So... I love that the show's not only a love letter to 1950s Jewish Manhattan, but comedy in general.
Yeah, and I just gotta say, so the last time I did stand-up, it was the first show I'd done since I'd seen this show. And it made my set different. I wasn't afraid to talk about the things that I wanted to talk about.
Wow.
And I said something, kind of nasty, but it was very true. And I would have normally been very afraid to say, it's so something Midge would have said. It's not that nasty. And everyone just like died over it, the honesty. And they're like, yeah, that's true. And that's gross. And that's weird. And I, for a moment, felt like I was Midge Maisel, and it really excited me.
But I think that's such like a great observation for you to make, because the root of comedy is to be honest, and mm-hmm. then it's so obvious when a comic isn't honest with what they're saying.
Yep, so true. Great. Well, we really like the show, guys, and excitingly, we have some news related to this show as well. Brianna, I will let you take it away. There we go.
AfterBuzz TV News.
I always feel like I should. I always forget to. I feel like I should bring my glasses in for that drop and just put on my.
Yes.
This is my serious time.
Reporter Brie.
So the Marvelous Ms. Maisel just got some award. Nominations.
Yeah.
For
Amazon submitted.
Submitted for the upcoming award season.
Yes.
So they have submitted under a comedy series for this show, which mm-hmm. people were unsure because it is dramedy and.
Hour long,
but you know, I do feel comedy is a easier going. Category if you want to win.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So they submitted for as a comedy series for Best Show. They submitted Best Actress for Rachel Brosnahan, who plays Miss Maisel, and Supporting Actress for Alex Borstein and Maren Hinkle, and Supporting Actor for Tony Shalhoub and Michael Zagan, and Guest Actress for Jane Lynch.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they cleared the Golden Globes.
Yes.
Obviously. And it was a beautiful thing to see them clear the Golden Globes, because a lot of people hadn't seen it yet.
I'm very into the awards game. I feel like it's my Super Bowl. And actually, for those watching on the YouTube, we actually have a picture of the screeners that Amazon sent out.
When are the Emmys? Do we know yet?
That'll be September.
Yeah, there's some. It's crazy. It's only May, but you know.
It starts. I love it. I'm so here for award season. I'm like the guy who listens to like
all
the awards show podcasts.
It's always fun too, because like you forget, because it did come out last year, yep. But it came out after the Emmys. So in like my head, because you're like Golden Globes, I'm like, yeah, why weren't they at the Emmys last year? Oh, right, because yep. They came out the end of the
this
year.
This is their first year of eligibility, and I think they're very smart to be putting a lot of money into it. I think if I'm looking at Amazon shows right now, I think this is probably their golden horse.
100%.
And if I had to put my life on it right now, I would say that Rachel Brosnahan is walking away with an Emmy for comedy actress this year.
I mean, she definitely should walk away with
an Emmy. I just got the chills, which means, guys, it's going to happen.
It's going to happen. You heard it here first on AfterBuzz TV. I think that's pretty much our news for right now, but we will keep you posted on any more Marvelous Mrs. Maisel juice.
Well, could I actually just say one thing?
Please.
About season two, which I've seen. There are some posters and stuff that have come out, and it's the Upper East Side divorcee, and she's like on the cover of Time magazine and stuff.
Wow.
And so she's looks like she's about to be a star, and that is what I follow all the actors and stuff on Instagram, and they're shooting season two right now, but you know, it's really exciting to see that she is potentially on the covers of all of these magazines in season two. She's
cool.
Making it,
and that's within the world of the show
kind yeah
of. Okay, cool. That's very exciting. Speaking of exciting upcoming things, I know you guys have seen the episode, but I have not seen the next two, so let's go ahead and do some brief predictions.
And now, your AfterBuzz TV predictions.
Okay, so I have not seen the next two episodes. You guys have, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to let you guys talk. But I think I think that we're going to
see... We'll just sit over here and like make faces at judge me. Get right mm-hmm. or not.
Yeah, fair enough. I'm used to being judged in my life, so this will just be... so I'm really excited to see more Alex Borstein. I think we're going to see like a very special mentor-mentee relationship develop between the two of them. And I think that Joel is going to come around to wanting Midge back. As of right now, I don't know how I feel about that because he's kind of a chode. So we'll have to see how that plays out. But those are my two major predictions. I'm excited to see. And again, I think each of those characters represents the two worlds she thinks she might want. And really, they're going to become the vessels for who she becomes. So mm-hmm. I'm excited to see that sort of, it's not so much a love triangle, but that character triangle play out as we move through the season.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, if you guys want to hear what we think of episodes 3 and 4, you should stay tuned because we're going to be live with them right now. We're kind of rushing coverage of the season because the show is that good. So we're going to keep moving. But until then, guys, my name is Jeff. If you want to find me on the internet, you can do that at Jeffrey C. Graham. As I mentioned, I do a weekly TV pilot review show, and we have discussions like this all the time. Sam is on that. Brianna produces it. So check that out on Wednesdays at 9 p.m. on this exact same network. We're covering everything all the time. So if you have a show that you love, chances are you can hear about it on our network. How about the rest of you guys?
Hey guys, I'm Brianna Phipps. You guys can find me at Brie, B-R-I underscore Phipps, P-H-I-P-P-S on both Twitter and Instagram.
And you guys can find me, Sam Davidson, at SamD43 on Twitter and Instagram. And if anyone ever wants to talk about this show, not even kidding, I will talk to you about it till, like, through the night. I'm a huge fan, so please hit me up, and thanks for having me.
Sam, it was great. Guys, this was a blast. We'll be here in 5 minutes, so stay tuned. We'll see you soon. This is AfterBuzz TV. Thank you.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.